the more you hang on the particular, on the concrete objective, on what you can immediately do, the more they will be tempted by every single proposal which promises them a particular achievement, and be quite willing to sacrifice possibilities of an uncertain and unpredictable development, which may be prevented by such government intervention, but which are not concretely visible, which are not tangible. In all this, I can do no more than illustrating or hinting on at certain basic philosophical and scientific beliefs of our time, which in general sway or determine the intellectual in favor of a socialist and against a free position. I have entered into this discussion at all because I wanted to make you at least feel that many of the issues will ultimately be decided in discussions on fairly theoretical and abstract topics. That where we shall be moving will depend in part on discussions of an epistemological, almost metaphysical character, on the nature of science, on the role of empiricism versus theory, all things which are thrashed out and discussed in the intellectual atmosphere and among intellectuals and scholars. To realize this is important because it depends on this, where an effective resistance can be put up, or I don't want to put it in the terms of resistance, because it must be more than the resistance to a trend, where an effective leadership in an alternative development can come. And this brings me to the second point, the chief division of what I want to say this morning. How much can we really hope from an opposition which calls itself conservatism and in its basic attitude is a conservative? Now, before I enter into this, I would like to point out to you a curious paradox which doesn't provide an ultimate argument against the name conservatism, but which ought to make one reflect. The whole conception of conservatism is, of course, a European one. There has been a conservative movement in Europe ever since the French Revolution, and its general and unified aim was to undo much of what the French Revolution had done. But what was the French Revolution? The French Revolution meant, in effect, the introduction into Europe of ideas which came from America. It was a gradual spreading, at least in its initial ideas, of the libertarian, constitutional, and, in the old sense, liberal ideas of the American founding fathers, which were spreading in Europe, which led to the French Revolution, were then rightfully exaggerated, and produced the conservative movement. Thus, conservatism is originally a movement of opposition against the American tradition. And it is a peculiar paradox that now, in this country, the people who want to revive the traditional American ideas should want to do this under the label of conservatives. But that is purely a historical point, and since it has come about that the term liberal is now in this country used for the exact opposite of what liberal used to mean in the 19th century, so perhaps it's no less absurd that the term conservatives should be used for the opposite of what conservatives used to mean in the 19th century. But I think there is something deeper and more alarming about the kind of mental attitude which is suggested by the adoption of the term conservatism. Anyone who uses the term is inclined to feel that it aims at defending an existing set of ideas. In fact, some of the leading conservatives of the present day, like young Buckley, have put it very explicitly in this form. The basic position of conservatism is that all the important thoughts of the world have been achieved in the past and nothing important is to be added to it. Now that just is not true. And if we oppose to the development of ideas on the other side merely restatements of our creed as it was formed in the 18th and 19th centuries, we are bound to be defeated. We are bound to be defeated because the ideas on the left are developed and expressed in terms of the scientific thinking of our time, adapted to the new factual and theoretical insights we have adopted, and seem to fit much better in that worldview which every child must learn as it learns modern science and modern development. If we state our views in terms of 18th and 19th century phrases, they do not fit into this picture at all. And I should put it even more strongly. They not only do not fit into the modern picture, they do not answer a great many questions which arise both out of the modern world picture or are created by the different modern organization of the world. We have to improve our argument. We have to develop the doctrines, the basic theory of a free society in a form in which it answers the questions of our time. Whereby questions of our time, I mean not only the questions arising out of the new circumstances of our time, also mean the questions arising out of the new intellectual background, the new state of science. I draw from this the conclusion that if we have, on the whole, had the worst of the conflict in the last 30 years, it is because our argument wasn't really good enough. That in order to have a chance of being victorious, the main task is to be done in the intellectual field. The main task of one is one of developing our argument further. And the reason why we have done so badly is because so little intellectual effort has been put into this task. There's no question, if you look at the history of the last 30 years, that much more thinking has been done on the socialists than on our side. That the socialists were those who were really excited about the problems which their kind of organization of society raised. 90%, and I'm not exaggerating, of the intense study of the problems of society during this period, 9/10 of the real intellectual effort was done on the socialist side. And we must not be surprised that these people who were developing, who were thinking about these problems, who were giving new answers, who were finding and seeing new problems, had a greater fascination for the students than the other side, who thought it had already achieved the wisdom, that it had the final answers, and was essentially repeating formula which they had learned from the 18th century. And that, I'm afraid, is what is inherent in the whole statement of the problem if you put it under the heading of conservatism. It suggests that we have once and for all the final answer. That we cling to the principles as they were formulated by Jefferson, or rather not Jefferson, by Madison and his contemporaries. Now, I'm not saying that these principles are wrong. On the contrary, I think there's much more wisdom in them than we now understand. But they are not static in the sense that the particular forms in which they were expressed at that time answer our problems. They point to a comprehensive theory of a free society, which we have failed to develop, which has failed to grow, and which in consequence has not exercised, that not had that appeal to the masses, not exercised that fascination which the view of the other can. Now you see where I'm aiming at. What I want to say is that I'm profoundly convinced that the fate of the ideals in which we believe in is a question of our success in developing, improving, and improving them, and in successfully answering every new problem as it is stated and formulated. We must, in our camp, develop as active, as acute, and as passionate an intellectual elite which will attract the young, which will fascinate them, which will make this not a cause to spread. The spreading comes almost automatically if the cause is interesting enough. A cause which fascinates, a cause which induces new people and young men to come in and to work on the problem, which makes it seem to them worth thinking and speculating about it, as the other side has been doing, thinking and speculating. Unless we make what is now called the conservative cause a great intellectual venture, something which offers real tasks for the mind and the spirit, just as for the past two or three generations socialism has offered the exercise of the mind, we shall not succeed. In practice, this means that it is infinitely more important to get such a development of ideas started in a small group than to have those ideas we already have spread at large in wider circles. I don't really think that we are quite ready yet to engage on mass propaganda. Perhaps we are getting on the point. I think, as this library over there suggests, the ammunition which has been accumulated in the last 10 or 12 years is such that we may begin seriously to think about the problem how to push this into wider market. But if we do so, not at the price of stopping this development. This is an important development for the future. The rest, the spreading of this, will come by itself if the ideas are there. Now, at this point, I think I will make my first stop. You have been very kind in not interrupting me. I hope it doesn't mean that I was difficult to follow. I can assure you, once you raise problems about it, I shall set out again and continue.